Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Between the Cavs continuing to roll, and in between all of that, the Guardians have decided to make a trade. College football is roaring in between there. So there's one person that's worth having the conversation with, and it's always a lot of fun to have him. He is the best friend of the show and a general good man all the way around. He's former Indians pitcher, current Rays television analyst, Brian Anderson. What's up, BA? Merry Christmas, bud.
Hey, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year rolling up here pretty quickly. So, yeah, it's that time of year. I just cannot believe, on a side note, just how quickly this off season is going. You know, our season ended because the Rays did not make the playoffs. The season for us ended on September the 29th, and here we are closing in on the first of the year, because once that calendar hits January, then it's all of a sudden how many days till pitchers and catchers report, and here we go.
So I got a theory on this, buddy, and you're either going to think I'm nuts. Well, you already think I'm nuts, but you'll think I'm even more nuts, or will completely shake your head at this. I think what happened this year is typically Thanksgiving hits, and there's usually like a week in between of November into the very beginning of December, and I feel like with how late Thanksgiving was, it kind of cranked everything into overdrive, because I feel the exact same way, and that's the only thought that I have from it.
Well, here's the thing. That theory was floated to me yesterday.
Really?
At the gym, we got into this discussion, and one of my dear friends at the gym said you realize this year Thanksgiving fell so late, you didn't have that week bump before you got into December. And I'm like, that's it. That is the answer. Because you did not, I felt like I did not catch my breath. I mean, we had Thanksgiving and all of a sudden we had Christmas. And that 1 week, I think, makes a huge difference, or whatever it is, 4, 5, 6 days, whatever it turns out to be. I think that that is absolutely the answer. That makes perfect sense to me.
It's the only one I can point to.
And I was going to say, maybe the fact that it makes perfect sense to me and you're talking about it, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but I'm on board with you.
May have to go check your own sanity after that one. Yeah. All right, buddy. So the Guards made a trade, and a trade that upset a whole bunch of people when they went and dealt Josh Naylor to the Arizona Diamondbacks for a compensatory pick. And that'll be like right in the 70s, somewhere in that area in the MLB draft. And a right-handed pitcher who hasn't exactly lit the world on fire when he's been at the major league level, and kind of feels like a, hey, you're just going to have to trust the pitching factory type of trade that's being made there. BA, I've been kicking around forever. How does a guy who hit 31 bombs last season have that little trade value in the modern game?
That's a wonderful question. I mean, that really is a wonderful question, because it seems that a lot of teams are looking for offense. I know that the Rays are one of them. I mean, you wish you had a guy. And Brandon Lau is the type of player that if he can stay healthy, he is a 30-plus home run guy. And any team would scramble like crazy to get that. So that is that is really interesting to me. I know that, organizations like Cleveland, again, we talk about this all the time, like Cleveland, like Tampa, they prioritize and they value those extra draft picks so much because it just continues to feed their farm system, and they're very good at who they draft, when they draft them. And to your point about the pitching factory, I think that that's what you got to put your faith in, is because Cleveland knows what they're doing in developing pitchers. So they see something that this young man has that they feel like, you know what, his strengths are not being, not prioritized is not the right word, but they're not being, you know, made full. And the weaknesses, we feel like we can shore them up. And so the Rays do the same thing. They'll look at an attribute of a pitch from a guy and be like, we can do something with this. He is not being used properly. And when we get our hands on him, we let him do his thing. We start to convince him, and all of a sudden teams and organizations like Cleveland, like Tampa, they have, you know, they have the resume as far as the pitching side of things go. They have, the track record where these pitchers, when they go to those particular organizations, they automatically, most of the time, are already buying in because they've seen what they've done with other guys. So they see something in this kid that they feel like they can really maximize and get a ton of value for him. There's no question.
Well, and you're 100% right. And it's so funny on that end, because you're right, the Rays do the exact same thing, and the Guardians will do it, and a couple other teams around the league are the same way, and you guys with the Jeffrey Springs trade on top of that. I mean, talk about a guy that you guys identified, and then basically we're like, well, let's get him into the pitching lab, and let's hook him up to the slow-motion TrackMan rep Soto, let's get all the spin rates, let's do all that stuff, and realize that if we move his release point up a 2 degrees, you know, and like all of this insane stuff that they're in, all of a sudden these guys just become insane, and they're so darn good, and it's just because of that little tweak, or hey, move your finger over here and put more pressure on your middle finger instead of your index finger. Like, it's just nuts how they do this, man.
It really is, and what allows them to be able to do that is the feedback that comes in real time. You know, we would go out and throw bullpens, and you had a pitching coach, a trained major league pitching coach with his eye on you, and he could see things and make little adjustments, but this is real-time info, like you said, right down to the pressure point of a finger and the finger placement on a baseball. And does that make the spin efficient enough? Because all of this stuff can be measured. And so you're right. You can change a little bit of the pressure on a particular finger. You can move the finger. You can cock the wrist. You can do a lot of different things in real time that allow you to change the shapes and the spin of these pitches. And that's why it has become such a pitching-dominated game. Goes back to your point, that means that guys that can hit 30-plus home runs on a regular basis should be more valuable because the offense is so difficult to come by nowadays.
You'd think, man, it's unbelievable. Brian Anderson joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So, B.A., then the guards turn around, and they bring back an old friend in Carlos Santana, who is 38 years old and continues to just be, I mean, he's like a metronome. You know, he is a metronome for a guy who's a low average with a high walk rate, doesn't strike out a boatload, plays gold glove defense, and he'll hit you 20 bombs. And it's so interesting because they kind of took the cash that they were going to give Josh Naylor and what was projected to give Josh Naylor and just gave it to Carlos Santana on a one-year deal. I'm still trying to wrap my head around just the whole like mindset behind this. What do you think? Is it maybe like they, you know, looking at the defensive side or looking at the fact that Carlos Santana is just a metronome and that everybody knows him and he's just consistent? What do you think would cause them to make a move like that?
I think it's all of the above. I think it's the consistency factor. I think that it's the on-base factor. You know, that is such a huge part of today's game because batting average is not what it used to be. You know, it's just not what it used to be. Guys don't hit. Not a lot of guys hit for a high average. But if you can combine walks and all of a sudden be able to go out there and have a very high on-base percentage, at the same time be able to pop 20, 25 home runs, be outstanding in the clubhouse, give you outstanding defense on top of it. Listen, these teams, we talk about wanting to be able to score runs. That's great. But a lot of them, too, focus just as heavily on run prevention. And not only is that pitching, but that's defense. So So if you can, you know, and they value, they put values on all of these different things, and that creates then a profile of a player where if you can give me a 360 on base percentage, hit me 23 home runs, play, you know, very, very good outstanding defense where you're, you know, above, well above replacement value defensively, that all of a sudden makes you this type of player, and that's extremely valuable. Especially if it's a team that prioritizes that. And so that's how all of these decisions are made. And you know what? On the surface, a lot of them don't make a ton of sense to the general public. But you and you know, you look and you're like, why? And you know, sometimes it's obvious, you know, whatever. But other times you wonder. But the people upstairs that are making these decisions, they have their formulas, they have their ways. And if they are continually able to maximize, a guy's attributes, and if they continually can go out and win ball games, make the postseason, then you have to start to trust them, because that's the way that the game is managed now, whether you like it or not.
All right, buddy. I'm going to do something you're going to yell at me for later. You are more than welcome to curse me out via text, because you can't do it any year because I only have 30 seconds of dump.
So
the Browns right now are at a crossroads, right? So basically, yeah. You can either go full-blown Wile E. Coyote with the TNT and just dynamite this whole thing down to the dirt and start from scratch, or you can try to thread the needle, find a veteran quarterback that's around there somewhere, maybe tinker the offense a little bit with Kevin Stefanski or bring in somebody different and try to make the playoffs next year, knowing darn well that you're going to have Deshaun Watson wandering around and maybe not being a part of it. Which path do you pick, BA?
Thread the needle. There's still too much talent here to blow it up right now. I think you try and thread the needle. You give it one more go, and if that doesn't happen, then that situation is probably going to take care of itself. But I would absolutely hope that they thread the needle.
So have you seen all the stuff walking or around of like Myles Garrett coming out and saying like,
oh yeah.
Boys, I'd like a plan, if possible. And then yesterday, yeah. Denzel Ward comes out and goes, boys, if you're going to give him the plan, I'd like to see it too, if needed. And then even Joel Petonio going, I need a plan, Jets.
Yeah, listen, because here's the other thing that tells you. That much like, you know, probably a lot of people feel, if they felt that DTR was the answer, they wouldn't be asking for a plan. So that right there,
point.
I think it is an indictment on
that's a really good
quarterbacking
point.
Right now. Because if they get to see him in practice every single day, they get to see him out there on Sundays. If they thought he was the answer, they wouldn't be asking for what's the plan going forward. So that right there, you can take it as an indictment on DTR. On top of that, that is also letting the front office know, we think we can do this, but we want to see what you have in mind. Again, they want to try to thread the needle too, which they should. They want to be there. They want to be in Cleveland, but they also want to win. So, yeah, I read all of that, and I saw them coming out one after the other, and I'm like, this is a team that believes they can still do it, but they want to have a pretty good idea about it. And, oh, by the way, they must not think whoever's in the quarterback room right now is going to be able to get it done.
From a professional athlete standpoint, when you see somebody with the kind of pull that Myles Garrett has come out to the media and say what he says, what does that do to everybody in that locker room?
I think it emboldens them. I think it emboldens them, and they realize that they have a leader. The thing that I like about it, you know, you see a lot of guys come out and making big demands and wanting to know this and tell me that. And I'm, you know, Myles did it in the most respectful way you could do it. He sent a clear message, but he didn't do it as a diva. He did it as a, hey, I love Cleveland. I want to retire a Brown, but I also want to win, and I feel like we can. What's the plan? You know, he did add an element of public pressure to the front office, but at the same time, he did it in the most undiva-like way. He was very respectful in his comments and very respectful of the organization and the city and proclaiming, I want to be here. I want to be a Brown for life. I mean, he couldn't have done it any better. Now we'll see what the response is.
BA, you're the man. Thank you for the time. I appreciate you doing this. It's good to talk to you as always. And we'll be talking on Sunday.
Hey, listen, we may be talking tomorrow. We got Nebraska-Boston College.
Oh, that's right.
Baby, in the Pinstripe Bowl. First time since 2016 they've made a bowl. I've never been so excited for a 6-6 team in my life.
Dude, you got I love your QB. I think the sky's the limit for Raiola. I really do.
Yeah, no, there is no question about it. And the fact that he came up, you know, he basically was raised through the Detroit Lions organization around Matthew Stafford and everything else because of his dad, you know, playing for such a long time. Great kid. You know, listen, the sky is the limit. He's got a real good chance at someday playing on Sundays, but, you know, they've been scrambling to get help for him through the portal. We'll see. But yeah, he's got all the talent in the world, and I'll get to see him one more time tomorrow.
You like the portal where it is right now, or do you want to move this thing?
No, you'd love to move it. You know, I heard them talking about it on one of the college football shows, and the I think it might have been the commissioner, and he was saying that, you know, when you're in these bowls, the portal is still, you don't have to go early. You know, you see a lot of these teams that are even in the college football playoff, players have jumped into the portal. And the guy was like, look, the portal is open for you until you are knocked out. So until you get knocked out, you have another, whatever it is, 5 or 7 days to be in the portal. The reality of it, though, is these kids that may be looking to transfer and the teams that want them are putting pressure on them. Like, well, we can't wait. If you go all the way to the end, we can't wait that long. I know the portal's still open for you, but it's not necessarily open for us. We need a decision now. And that's why you're seeing these kids jump out, even on teams that have a chance to win a national title. And you have to hate that. You know, I think the portal system right now, the way that it is, it's, you know, think about it, if it was free agency for every player in every sport every year. That's what it basically is in college football, and it's made it absolute chaos. And so I don't like it the way it is. I don't know exactly how you fix it. I haven't sat down, even attempted to try to figure that out. That's for people with much higher pay grade than I am when it comes to that kind of stuff. But as it is right now, it is the wild, wild west. I think we see that every day.
All right, so here's my half-baked idea on this, which is I want to move this thing to Memorial Day weekend. And the reason I picked Memorial Day is, A, you've got a bit of a lull in the sports calendar. You've got golf going on. You got baseball. You got a little bit of NBA playoffs and all that kind of stuff. But you are after finals. And so then that way these guys are locked in and we can still fulfill the school obligations because they are still in school. But we can get out of the end of finals and then open the portal and you can dominate that whole week because there's nothing else going on besides baseball, NBA, and golf. What do you think?
I love how you're like, there's nothing going on in the sports world. You got baseball. You know, forget that.
Well, you and I are hooked on this thing. I mean, I'm not worried about us. Like,
listen, that at the end of the day, that's the best idea for the transfer portal that I've heard today. So let's go with it. Let's go with it and see where it leads.
All right, beautiful, man. Take care of yourself. Happy holidays to you and the family. Hope the kids are still rolling in all their gifts.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy New Year to you, and I'll talk to you next week.
Happy New Year too, buddy. He is Brian Anderson. He is the best friend of the show, and he joins us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I love when you get guests that you try to get off the air, and they end up derailing to talk other things, and you're like, you know what? We're doing this. BA wants to talk Nebraska. Damn it, we're talking Nebraska. That's the way that the world's going to work today. 216-474-0092 at the Sports Feller on Twitter. I want to get into what he had to say on Josh Naylor, and I wanted to get on the guards and everything that I heard over Christmas involving Josh Naylor. We'll give away a couple Christmas presents along the way. We'll grind a few gears along there, too. And Kevin Stefanski joins from Berea 1:30 today, but first, 2020 with Anthony. I love talking to those guys. I love talking BA as well. It's fun when you can talk to smart people about things and get their two cents because their viewpoint can occasionally coincide with yours, but also can be different at the same exact time. And that's kind of where I am with Josh Naylor thing, is a lot of people have thrown out a lot of things. And I kind of have this problem in my brain, right? In that there's the analytical side of my brain, and then there's like the human side. You know, like it's kind of like that Spock thing where there's like you operate completely in logic and you can see all the analytics. You can see how these people are thinking. You can see how these people operate. And then there's like that other part of me that is also like, yeah, but I do kind of have feelings too. I'm not full blown a robot. I'm not full blown a Vulcan. You know, I got a human mother. Like I kind of see that whole thing. You know, it's for those of you nerds out there who understand what I'm talking about. Like, that's how I am. And so, like, the analytical side of my brain saw the Josh Naylor move and was immediately like, okay, you moved the 2.2 war player, you know, especially use Fangraphs war, which doesn't exactly, you know, look upon his defense with such bright lights, all of that kind of stuff. Like, I could see all of that stuff. You moved a below average defender. The on-base percentage isn't going a direction that you totally wanted to. The slugging percentage went up in the first half of the year and went down in the second half of the year. Maybe you're not, you know, the playoffs exposed something of what Josh Naylor was doing that this organization didn't like, and it exposed something that I can tell you your fan base didn't exactly like as he proceeded to hit 252 with a 256 on base and a 275 slugging percentage. No home runs, 10 Ks, and 2 walks, and 43 plate appearances. But, like, again, the analytical side of my brain can look at all this stuff. I go, okay, if I could take that and give it to Carlos Santana, and I get 10 less bombs, but I get a higher on base, and I get better defense, and I still maintain a veteran presence, and all of those things that coincide with each other for the same amount of money, and I get this compensatory pick, and I get a kid that fits my profile that maybe I could put into the pitching lab and I can hand to Carl Willis and we could hook him up to TrackMan and Repsoto and all that stuff and move a finger this direction and a release point this direction and all of a sudden he gets something worth building upon. Okay, I get it. But then the other side of my brain kicks in and goes, Josh Naylor was a lot of fun. Josh Naylor brought a lot of joy to a lot of people watching baseball. He'd get fire up the head butts that he did of Terry Francona, the helmet spikes, rocking the baby against the Yankees. The way the dude with that size would hustle on top of it and slide and be covered in dirt and would go absolutely nuts and seemed like a madman and everything in between there. Like there's that side of it too, where you realize that this is also an entertainment industry and you realize the amount of entertainment that guy brought to the table. And like that's where my brain has issues with these kind of moves. Because I get it. There was 1 year left on that, and maybe the Guardians looked at his body type and said, I don't know how well that's going to age. Maybe we shouldn't do that. We saw what happened to Prince Fielder with the Brewers. He was really good for a while. The Brewers let him go to the Rangers. He ran into neck issues, ran into back issues, had to retire earlier than he should. Cecil Fielder, kind of a same general idea, hit Prince's dad. Like, that body type does not age as well as you would like it to. And so I just am like, I'm torn on this because I love Carlos Santana. I've been a Carlos Santana fan for a long time. He's walks a ton. He'll hit home runs. He felt like the first time that like you saw the gap of analytics between two separate sides of the fan bases. There was a chunk of people who hated Carlos Santana because they'd look at his batting average and go, he can't even hit his weight. Why do we care? And then you had another group who were like, no, you don't understand. Like, by hook or by crook, he's standing at first base or he hits the ball over the fence. Like, yes, I know. His batting average isn't what it once was. But if you look one move over on the baseball card, you can see where that guy's value lies. And like, I will always love Carlos Santana for that. I wish he would have hit leadoff for a good chunk of the time in the seasons that he was here. But it's not the reality. But it's still like, man, this stinks. This is a guy I really loved watching play baseball. He brought me a lot of joy. He brought kids a lot of joy. He got to play with his brother. That's really cool. That happens with the Alomars, the Alus, the Aaron brothers. Like, the Boones. I don't know if Brett and Aaron ever played together, but nonetheless, you get where I'm going. It doesn't happen very often. And this organization continues to roll right along. And this organization continues to go. And it stinks. Because what I loved about this Guardians team last year was the fact that we had all screamed and yelled about the lack of power. We had all screamed and yelled about how this team cannot hit the ball over the fence. And like last year, they finally woke up and they hit 185 homers as a team, right? It was 12th in baseball. The season before that, they hit 124 home runs and it was dead last. I remember I used to joke all the time about how I think the Yankees outfield actually hit more home runs than the entire Guardians team. And in the modern game, with how good the pitching is, you have to be able to make people pay. And Josh Naylor went into the lab, and he altered his swing, and he started hitting more home runs last year. He hit 31 out. We were all appreciative. In the first half of the season, he was red hot, 246 with a 325 on base and a 491 slug. He hit 20 bombs, or he hit 22 bombs in the first half. It slipped a little bit in the second half. He only hit 8 bombs, slugged 406 with a 311 on base. .204 batting average. So relatively consistent, just the home runs didn't go over the fence like they were in the beginning. And then fell apart with the playoffs. And so first base for this team is going to be one of those where for the first month of the season, they're going to scroll over there and you're going to see Carlos Santana. You're like, oh, it's Carlos Santana. That's great. It's nice to see him back. And then there's also going to be a small party that's like, yeah, but he's not Josh Naylor. Yeah, but he's not the guy who headbutted Terry Francona and made him wear a helmet after post-game interviews. He's not the guy who rocked the baby to the Yankees. Like, you lose a little bit of that fire. And you lose somebody off of this team that became an instrumental part of it. And it stinks. I'm not going to lie to you. It stinks. I get why they did it. I think Carlos Santana is probably a better player than Josh Naylor. But it still stinks. Not to mention you're handed to a 38-year-old as kind of a Band-Aid solution, hoping that Carl Manzardo turns around. But that's how this team operates. And BA laid it out oh so well of how this team operates. You know, BA did such a great job just going like, hey, man, they've got this figured out. And this is part of being this type of team, is that you are perpetually thinking to yourself, all right, how do I maintain a winner? How do I make sure I do this? How do I keep the pipeline coming? How do I keep good players coming through this organization and maintain being a playoff team at the same time? And they figured it out to this point. So as mad as we all are at the Andrés Giménez trade, and as mad as we all are at the Josh Naylor deal, moved on with Carlos Santana on top of it, they continue to win. So you kind of have to trust them. And you kind of have to nod your head and go, all right, they'll figure it out. They made the ALCS last year. They'll figure it out. Maybe there's something out there. Maybe there's somebody else that could come in and help this ball club out. 216-474-0092 at the Sports Feller on Twitter. Filling in for Andy and Jeff today are the great Tim May joining us 1 o'clock today. Letterman Rowe. We'll also have Kevin Stefanski at 1:30. It stinks. The Josh Naylor trade stinks. But I get it, too. Where are you on this deal? Dan Menigan, Baskin Phelps, 92.5. Tim May joining us in 20 minutes for help you get ready for the college football season ahead. And I want to talk about that indoor golf league with him, too, because I'm fascinated by this. And Tim's going to have some thoughts on this whole idea. But I'm getting yelled at right now. I'm getting it from a lot of different directions. People are yelling at me. They're not happy. I have upset the locals on the Josh Naylor part of this. And to brief you, it's like, okay, the analytical side of my brain kicks in and goes, all right, you're 1 year away from a contract extension. You're going to have to pay him a decent amount of dough. This team doesn't want to pay him a decent amount of dough from what it seems like. So take a guy with a 2.2 wins above replacement and swap him out for a guy who's a 3-win player because of his defense. Again, through Fangraphs, I know we're not going to... Sports Talk Radio is not the place to be yelling about the difference between Baseball Reference War and Fangraphs War. That's for message boards for people who are listening to this to sit there and want to give wedgies to everybody who is putting in and proceed to put up the flagpole. So I get this, okay? The analytical side of my brain goes, you know, they honestly may have upgraded by bringing in 38-year-old Carlos Santana. But the non-analytical side, the fan side of my brain kicks in and goes, Josh Naylor's fun. I liked watching him play baseball. He was a hefty fellow who was very, very rambunctious. And he threw things, and he rocked the baby to the Yankees, and he did that, and I love that. And I love anybody who's basically telling the Yankees to go kick rocks barefoot. I love every last bit of that. That's what I'm here for. And so I get it. I understand where the organization is coming from, but it still sucks. That's where I land. Like, this stinks. But I get it. And it's a bad place to be. And it's a bad place to live life. And so, Alex in a car, welcome to the program, man.
Well, I think what the Guardians have done with Naylor and Giménez is just emblematic of what they've forced on the fans the last 15 years. I think the guys, Antonetti, Chernoff, those guys are geniuses with what they have to work with. But when, according to the Forbes magazine and a Wall Street Journal, mm-hmm. the ownership is the fourth wealthiest ownership in baseball, and when you draw 2.3 million fans and you make a deep playoff run and you get rebate money from the TV deal that went down mm-hmm. and all the increased revenue, and you essentially make a sideways move despite the fact that you were in the ALCS, because you tell us, well, we're a small market team, we don't have the revenue. That just doesn't, it's not borne out by the facts. So I think the Dolan family basically takes the position, we're going to spend a little bit of money. And by the way, we're always third or fourth lowest, if not lowest, in payroll every year. They just won't invest money. And we don't expect them to spend like the Dodgers or the Yankees.
Right.
But you know what? If you spend in the top 15, you could probably sign Teoscar Hernandez.
Don't do it to me, Ox. Don't do it to me.
You could probably re-sign Kwan, because we all know in a few years they're going to tell us they can't afford Kwan anymore. And, you know, it's just frustrating because the entire premise they sell us is they don't have the money and they have to make these decisions. And it's just a false premise. And shame on them, because they told us they'd spend money if we showed up, and they drew 2.3 million fans last year. And it's just, we're tired of it. Yeah, we appreciate competitive baseball, but that seems to be their World Series. If they make the postseason, they believe they've done their job. And I'll hang up because I've been going for a while. But
no, you're making sense, dude.
Spending a little bit of extra money. I mean, last year, the Minnesota Twins, I think they were ninth in payroll. And certainly, they're not run as well as we are. But could you imagine if Chris Antonetti at least had that type of budget?
I have
what they could do.
Alex, I have said forever, and I appreciate the call, man. Thank you very much, and a very happy new year to you. Look, everything he says makes sense. And I get that. I get everything that he said. I really do. I have screamed forever that there is no reason why this team can't be 16th in payroll. That this team can't be 17th in payroll. Somewhere in between there, where they can properly compensate guys that they see as cornerstones and not turn this into the 7-year developmental league or the 6-year or the 5-year developmental league before they move on to these guys, especially when they get guys who are cornerstones. And they did that with a Jose Ramirez, and I pat them on the back for it, and I thank them for doing that one. But Alex is right. I would be, if you want to get some goodwill back, and the goodwill that you got from that ALCS run, I would stick a long-term contract in front of Stephen Kwan. I would debate some kind of long-term contract with Brian Rocchio. And I know some people are 50-50 on that one, and I'm willing to listen if you're like, okay, I want to see it for another year before I do this. I have been a Rocchio honk for a good period of time, so some of that is playing into this. I get it. I wish that was the case. I want it to be the case. I want to put the pressure on them for that to be the case. I loved this ALCS run. It was awesome. It was so much fun. It was great having playoff baseball. That joint was jumping. The Jenkenzi Noel home run will go down as the loudest I have ever heard that place, followed closely by the David Fry home run. Like, it was unbelievable how loud that joint got, which will also go up there with Rafa's call of that and Brian Anderson's call of that, the play-by-play Brian Anderson's call of that as well. I mean, it just... those moments I will never get back, and they're phenomenal. And I want them to behave differently than they do. And I loved watching Josh Naylor play baseball. But the analytical side of my brain continues to overrule the part that's like, he's really fun. There's the other part of my brain that comes in. You know, it's like Deadpool, man. It's the other side of my brain that then comes in and goes, you realize he was a below-average defender who did not exactly draw walks and wasn't exactly slugging at the level that you wanted him to outside of a hot first half. Like, that part of my brain then kicks in. It is just like, hey, guy who had fun, you know what's also fun? Winning. You know what helps you win more? Carlos Santana. Like, that's the argument that currently is going on in there. Greg in North Canton, how are you, man?
Yeah, that's the problem with Naylor. This isn't 15, so everyone must have figured this out.
I know.
He hit 24 home runs before the All-Star break, and boy, watching him with in the playoffs, what did he have? He had three RBIs in the entire postseason.
I don't want you to totally lose your lunch, but I can read this to you if you want. He was .252 with a .256 on base and a .275 slug with 10 Ks and 2 walks.
I mean, that's just, and some of it was, you know, I guess if you're going to go to that point now, obviously the Santana thing is just to give Manzardo some breathing room so he doesn't have to worry about first base. That's what that is. And besides, I don't know how he wanted to go up, but now you can let Manzardo DH and just get his feet wet. That's been a problem with the Rooks.
Right, and you brought in a guy in Santana who's a metronome. I mean, he's played over 150 games 9 times in his career. He's a top 5 defensive first baseman. He's going to give you a 320, 330 on base, and he's going to hit 23 out. Like, you can,
I think the thing is, what people aren't understanding is our pitching, we don't know what we have. We don't know what's up with Tristan McKenzie. We don't know if he's ever going to pitch again. And what these guys were getting in free agency, I mean, if Alex Cobb is getting $17 million, I mean, I guess you'll take a flyer on anybody, any second and third guys. We could not live with the 5-5 next year. I mean, this whole baseball pitching chaos of having guys pitch 2 innings and have 9 pitching changes is not sustainable.
Greg, I appreciate the call, man. Happy New Year to you. And that's another part of this, is the Guardians clearly looked out and they said, oh my God, you're going to give Matthew Boyd how much? Wee. You're going to give Alex Cobb what? Sean Manaea's getting $75 million, huh? Like, you see these things pop up, and it makes your head spin, and especially when you've got a pitching lab. I get it from that regard. I just wish, I said it to Anthony when he was in the break. I saw the deal for Gleyber Torres, and I was like, damn, why isn't he playing second base for this ball club? You've got an influx of cash. You got all of these things. Go sign a 1-year deal for Gleyber Torres. That's 25 bombs and a decent glove over there at second base. And if the Tigers are playing these waters, why aren't you? Because Mr. I is no longer with us. So they're no longer in the world where they're having to win a World Series before I die. Like, we're operating in a different realm right now. This is where this Guardians team will both frustrate me. And while I feel like to totally go pop culture on you, they will frustrate me, but in the same way, I feel like the Shawshank Redemption, I've been institutionalized, where it's like you look at these walls and you hate them, and then all of a sudden you accept them, and then all of a sudden you rely on these walls. You know, the great quote in that movie from Red. And I feel like some of that has become me with the Guardians and how they operate, is that I've become institutionalized. Is that I look at how this team operates and I go, I'm done fighting this fight. They're not going to change. This is how they're going to operate. This is what they do. Why am I banging the table and screaming for Teoscar Hernandez? I mean, years ago, I would bang the table and scream for A.J. Pollock. I thought, stick that dude in center field and let's go. You know, not anymore. He's past his prime, but alas, you get the general idea. I love Teoscar. I would have brought Teoscar in last year. I mean, there are so many things that are out there and so many guys that are out there that could better benefit this team that made an ALCS run and just needs that shove, just that one more just hard shove to get them over the line. But I guess this organization looks at it, and maybe I've been institutionalized, and I'm willing to accept that if that is the case. But they look at it as, hey, man, get me in the dance, and then let's see what happens once we get into the dance. Because once I get in the dance, I need 4 hot relievers, 3 hot bats, and 2 hot starters. Maybe that's what they look at. Get me in the dance. And I could get you 4 hot relievers, 3 hot hitters, and 2 hot starters. Maybe that's how they're looking at this. It's not the worst way to look at it, but it's not the way that gets people pumped, especially coming off of a World Series where we watched the Dodgers roll out Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Max Muncy, down the line from there, Yamamoto coming out of there too, and you could watch that Yankee team with those big old boys rolling out and hitting it. You know, and hitting balls way all over the place outside of Aaron Judge, who had his struggles. I don't know. Maybe I've been institutionalized. I wish they had 15th. That would be my dream on the payroll. They're just not. They're going to continue to operate this way. 216-474-0092 at The Sports Feller on Twitter, if you so desire. The legend, Tim May, Letterman Row, next.